Hallo, hallo. Vi skal til at starte vores møde i aften, og jeg vil selvfølgelig byde velkommen til alle dem, som er kommet til en meget interessant aften, er vi ikke i tvivl om. Og selvfølgelig, especially welcome to you, Professor John Lennox from Oxford. Thank you for visiting us. We have been looking forward for this meeting. Men altså velkommen og velkommen til dig, John Lennox. Og værsgo.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
God aften, damer og herrer.
It's a real pleasure for me to be invited to be with you here in Denmark.
Jeg er glad for at kunne være sammen med jer i aften i Danmark.
I have been here several times before at the University of Aarhus.
Jeg har været her flere gange på universitetet i Aarhus.
But I think this is the first time I have spoken in this particular church.
Men det er første gang jeg har talt her i denne kirke.
And I have been asked to say a little bit about my own origin.
Jeg er blevet bedt om at fortælle lidt om min egen oprindelse.
I come originally from Northern Ireland.
Jeg stammer fra Nordirland.
So I understand what it is to come from a small country.
Så jeg ved, hvad det vil sige at komme fra et lille land.
I was very fortunate in my parents.
Jeg var meget heldig med mit valg af forældre.
They were Christian without being sectarian.
De var kristne uden at være sekteriske eller ekstreme.
And they allowed me to think.
Og de tillod mig at tænke for mig selv.
So that when I went to Cambridge in 1962,
så da jeg kom til Cambridge i 1962,
I didn't feel a burden of sectarianism on my back.
Der havde jeg ikke ekstremisternes byrde på ryggen.
Now in Cambridge it was a very long time ago. It was still the days of C.S. Lewis.
Men i Cambridge dengang, der var C.S. Lewis stadig til stede.
And I had the good fortune to attend the very last lectures C.S. Lewis gave in the English faculty in Cambridge.
Og jeg var så heldig at være med til C.S. Lewis' aller sidste forelæsning på Cambridge.
And in many ways, C.S. Lewis has been for me an intellectual mentor.
Og for mig har C.S. Lewis været en intellektuel mentor.
Although he was not a scientist, he understood what the basic issues are in the great debate that is the subject of my book.
For selvom han ikke selv var videnskabsmand, så kendte han til det emne, som min bog handler om.
Now, from my childhood, I've been interested in the intellectual defense of Christianity.
Siden barndommen har jeg været interesseret i det intellektuelle forsvar for kristendommen.
And that came to a focus when, in my first week as a student at Cambridge.
Og det blev tydeligt for mig under min første uge som studerende på Cambridge.
When a student said to me, "Do you believe in God? Do you go to church?"
Og nogle studerende sagde til mig, "Tror du på Gud? Går du i kirke?"
And then he said, "Oh, sorry, I shouldn't have asked you that question. You're Irish."
Og så, undskyld, jeg skulle ikke have stillet det spørgsmål, du er irsk.
"And all you Irish believe in God, and you fight about it."
Alle I tror på Gud, og I slås om det.
I'd heard that before, of course, many times.
Og det havde jeg selvfølgelig hørt mange gange før.
But somehow it struck me as being very important to face it in Cambridge.
Men på en eller anden måde blev det meget vigtigt for mig at gå frem og møde det i Cambridge.
After all, my parents were believers.
Mine forældre var jo troende.
My grandparents were believers.
Mine bedsteforældre også.
And so far as I know, their parents were believers.
Og så vidt jeg ved, var deres forældre det også.
So obviously Freud would explain me very simply as a product of Irish genetics.
Så Freud ville forklare mig meget nemt som et produkt af en irsk genetik.
And of course, this is the popular view.
Og det er selvfølgelig den almindelige opfattelse.
My very famous colleague Richard Dawkins at Oxford wrote a book called The God Delusion.
Min berømte kollega på Oxford, Richard Dawkins, han har skrevet bogen Illusionen om Gud.
And so this idea that God is a delusion, a figment of the imagination, is playing a very important role in discussion today.
Så det om, at Gud er bare et produkt af vores fantasi, spiller en stor rolle i dag.
And so throughout my life, I have been interested in worldviews that are not my own.
Så gennem hele mit liv har jeg været interesseret i verdensopfattelser, som jeg ikke har delt.
On that day in Cambridge, I decided that I would befriend someone who did not come from a Christian background.
Og den dag i Cambridge, der besluttede jeg mig for at blive venner med nogen, som ikke kom fra en kristen baggrund.
Who did not believe in God.
Og som ikke troede på Gud.
And who had never been to church.
Og som aldrig havde været i kirke.
And I've been doing that all my life.
Det har jeg fortsat med hele livet igennem.
Later on I learned German and I spent a lot of time during the Cold War in the German Democratic Republic.
Senere lærte jeg tysk, og jeg tilbragte meget tid igennem den kolde krig i Østtyskland.
Interested in systematic atheism and what it does to people's thinking when it's taught in school and university.
Jeg blev interesseret i systematisk ateisme og hvad det gør ved folk, når de får det indlært igennem hele deres opvækst.
And during that time I became a Russian translator.
Og i løbet af den periode blev jeg også oversætter til russisk.
And when the wall collapsed in 1989, I started to visit Russia.
Og da muren faldt i 89, der begyndte jeg også at tage ind i Rusland.
Mainly to discuss with people in the Academy of Sciences about their education in Marxist atheism.
Især for at tale med folk i de videnskabelige selskaber om marxisme og hvordan det er, når det er blevet undervist.
So over many years I have been interested in what atheists think of God.
Så igennem mange år har jeg altså været interesseret i, hvad ateister tænker om Gud.
And I suppose in a way that was a preparation for first of all debating Richard Dawkins and then many of the world's most famous atheists in the last few years.
Det har vel været min basis for at kunne debattere med Richard Dawkins og andre førende ateister.
So that's a little bit of background.
Så det var lidt om min egen baggrund.
And the book that you have so very kindly translated into your language.
Og den bog, som I meget venligt har fået oversat til dansk.
Is really an attempt to get a discussion going.
Er faktisk et diskussionsoplæg.
In the academy today in the West, there is a very widespread impression that science has buried God.
I akademiske cirkler er der i dag en meget udbredt opfattelse af, at videnskaben har begravet Gud.
That it is impossible to be an intellectual and at the same time believe in God.
At det er umuligt på samme tid at være intellektuel og tro på Gud.
And indeed we are told that we must simply choose between science on the one hand and God on the other.
Og vi får at vide, at vi må vælge mellem på den ene side videnskaben og på den anden side Gud.
The most recent famous scientist to offer us that choice is Professor Stephen Hawking.
Den seneste fremtrædende videnskabsmand, der har stillet os over for det valg, er Stephen Hawking.
And of course, he as a scientist, he probably is the most famous living scientist.
Og han er sikkert den mest berømte af alle nulevende videnskabsfolk.
And intellectually, he is light years ahead of Richard Dawkins.
Og rent intellektuelt er han lysår forud for Richard Dawkins.
He's also light years ahead of me.
Og mig selv inkluderet.
I remember him quite well in Cambridge before he got his motor neuron disease.
Jeg kan huske ham tydeligt fra Cambridge, før han fik den sygdom, der har handicappet ham.
But I think he's completely wrong.
Men jeg tror virkelig, han tager fejl.
And I think it's quite easy to explain why he is wrong.
Jeg tror endda, det er meget nemt at forklare, hvorfor han har.
And that is one of the objectives of my book.
Og det er et af målene med min bog.
Now, this book appeared in English before Stephen Hawking wrote his most recent book.
Og denne bog udkom på engelsk, inden Stephen Hawking skrev sin seneste bog.
So I'm afraid I had to write another book.
Så jeg må desværre blive nødt til at skrive en ny bog.
Which is called God and Stephen Hawking. Whose design is it anyway?
Som hedder Gud og Stephen Hawking. Hvem har I jo designet det?
But I've got a list of questions here that I'm supposed to answer.
Jeg har fået en liste over spørgsmål, som...
And I'll take the second one first, and it says, what is the answer to the subtitle of your book? Is it true that science has buried God?
Og spørgsmålet er, hvad er svaret på undertitlen til din bog? Er det virkelig sandt, at videnskaben har begravet Gud?
And like a wise professor, I think I'll tick the questions as I come to them in case I answer the same question twice.
For ikke at svare det samme spørgsmål to gange, som mærker lige af.
Well, let's look at this situation, the choice between God or science.
Lad os se på det, valget mellem Gud og videnskab.
That comes from a double confusion.
Det er et spørgsmål, der stammer fra en dobbelt forvirring.
It's not simply a confusion about the meaning and nature of science.
Det er ikke blot en forvirring omkring, hvad videnskaben er.
It is a confusion about the concept of God.
Men det er også en forvirring omkring, hvad Gud er.
Let me try and explain that.
Lad mig forklare det.
The word God means many things to many different people.
Ordet Gud betyder mange ting for mange forskellige mennesker.
But for many atheist scientists, it has a specialized meaning.
Men for mange ateistiske videnskabsfolk har det en helt særlig betydning.
That is, they think that I believe in a God of the gaps.
Og det er, at de tror, at jeg tror på en mellemrummenes Gud.
In other words, I can't explain it, therefore God did it.
Med andre ord, det som jeg ikke kan forklare, det har Gud gjort.
Science cannot understand it, therefore God is behind it.
Når videnskab ikke kan forklare det, så er det Gud, der står bag.
Now of course, if you believe in a God of the gaps,
hvis man tror på en sådan mellemrummenes Gud,
then you have to choose between science and God for logical reasons.
Så bliver man rent logisk nødt til at tro på enten Gud eller videnskaben.
Because the more God, the less science.
For jo mere der er af Gud, jo mindre er der af videnskaben.
The more science, the less God.
Jo mere der er af videnskaben, jo mindre er der af
Gud. For instance, people often say to me, you know, people used to think that thunder and lightning was the voice of the gods.
For eksempel siger man ofte til mig, man troede jo engang, at torden og lynet var gudernes stemme.
But then we did a little bit of atmospheric physics and we discovered it had to do with electrical discharges and atmospheric pressure and so on.
Så opdagede vi, at det havde snart med elektriske udladninger og sådan noget at gøre.
So more science, less God.
Så mere videnskab, mindre Gud.
But I do not believe in a God of the gaps.
Men jeg tror ikke på mellemrummenes Gud.
God is the God of the whole show.
Gud er Gud over det hele.
When Isaac Newton discovered his law of gravitation,
da Isaac Newton han opdagede tyngdeloven.
He didn't say, "Now I've got a law of gravitation."
Så sagde han, "Åh, nu har jeg tyngdeloven."
I understand how it works.
Jeg forstår hvordan det fungerer.
I don't need God.
Nu har jeg ikke længere brug for Gud.
No, he didn't say that at all.
Det var slet ikke det.
In fact, he wrote the most famous book in the history of science, the Principia Mathematica.
Han har faktisk skrevet den mest berømte bud i bog i videnskabens historie, Principia Mathematica,
explaining in the foreword that he hoped it would convince a thinking person to believe in God.
Hvor han udtrykker, at han håber, at denne bog vil overbevise et tænkende menneske om, at de skal tro på Gud.
So the more he understood about the laws that govern the universe, the more he admired the genius of the God who had done it that way.
Så jo mere han opdagede omkring universets mysterie, jo mere beundrede han den, der havde sat det hele i værk.
And of course that's obvious, isn't it?
Og det er jo også klart.
The more you understand about art, the more you can admire the genius of a Rembrandt or a Picasso.
Jo mere man ved om kunst, jo mere kan man beundre Rembrandt og Picasso.
The more you understand of engineering, the more you can admire a Rolls-Royce engine or a turbojet of an aircraft.
Jo mere man ved om ingeniørkunst, jo mere kan man beundre en Rolls-Royce motor eller en jetmotor.
God is not only the God of the gaps, he's the God of everything.
Gud er ikke blot mellemrummenes Gud, han er altings Gud.
So that's the first answer to the question.
Så det er den første del af svaret på dette.
But the second answer to the question is this.
Men det andet svar, anden del af svaret er dette.
And I go back again to Newton to explain it.
Og så går jeg igen tilbage til Newton.
When Newton looked at the universe and thought about it brilliantly, he came up with his law of gravitation.
Da Newton så ud i universet og tænkte på det med sin geniale hjerne, så kom han op med tyngdeloven.
But he didn't offer his law of gravitation as an alternative explanation to God.
Han fremstillede ikke tyngdeloven som et alternativ til en eller anden Guds forklaring.
Because Newton had the sense to see what I find children can see.
For Newton var lige så klog som børn, når de siger.
But I find some professors cannot see it for some reason.
Og som nogle professorer ikke kan se.
And it's a very simple philosophy argument.
Og det er et meget enkelt filosofiargument, som selv børn kan bruge.
Suppose I have here a Ford motor car engine.
For eksempel, forestil jer, at jeg havde en motor fra en Ford.
And I say, I'm going to give you two kinds of explanation of it.
Og siger, nu vil jeg forklare denne motor på to måder.
The first is in terms of engineering and the law of internal combustion.
For det første, den første er om ingeniørkunst og forbrændingsmotorens principper.
The alternative explanation, the other explanation is Henry Ford.
Og den anden forklaring er Henry Ford.
Now will you please choose between those two explanations?
Vælg venligst mellem disse to forklaringer.
Well, when I say this in a school of 13-year-olds, they start to laugh.
Når jeg siger det her over for nogle 13-årige, så begynder de at grine.
And they say, but sir, you can't choose, you must have both.
Men det kan man jo ikke sige, I skal jo have begge to.
And yet I meet many scientists who cannot see the logic of that.
Men det er der mange videnskabsfolk, der ikke kan se logikken i.
You see, a total explanation of a Ford car involves, on the one hand, an explanation of, in terms of law and mechanism.
Fordi når man skal give en samlet forklaring på en Ford-bil, så kræver det både en forklaring af mekanik og så videre.
And an explanation in terms of the agent who designed it originally, that's Henry Ford.
Men også at den, der oprindeligt har designet den, nemlig Henry Ford.
There is no conflict between those two explanations.
Og der er ingen nogen konflikt imellem disse to forklaringer.
You need both of them.
Og man har brug for
begge. That's entirely obvious.
Det er klart.
And so a scientific explanation, say of gravitation,
så en videnskabelig forklaring på for eksempel tyngdeloven,
does not compete with the explanation that God was the God that invented gravity.
Er ikke i konkurrence til den forklaring, der hedder at Gud opfandt tyngdekraften.
Any more than Henry Ford competes with the law of internal combustion as an explanation for his motor car.
Ikke mere end Henry Ford er i modsætning til lovene om forbrændingsmotorens virkemåde.
But there's even deeper confusion.
Men der er en forvirring, der går endnu dybere.
If you have a law of gravitation,
hvis vi tager tyngdeloven,
do you think you know what gravity is?
Ved du så, hvad tyngde er? Tyngdekraft er?
Newton didn't.
Newton vidste ikke.
He was quite clear about this.
Det var meget klart.
And I wish they'd taught me it at school.
Det ville jeg ønske, at de havde undervist om på skolen.
The laws of nature are not explanations in that sense. They do not tell us what gravity is.
Naturlovene er ikke forklaringer som sådan. De fortæller ikke, hvad tyngdekraft er.
Actually, no one knows what gravity is.
Der er faktisk ingen, der ved, hvad tyngdekraft er.
Or what energy is.
Eller hvad energi
er. Or what time is.
Eller hvad tid er.
And yet, sometimes the impression is given that because we have got a law that describes what happens, that we've understood it at all levels. Of course we haven't.
Nogle gange får vi det indtryk af, at bare fordi vi har en lov, der kan beskrive, hvordan noget virker, så forstår vi det fuldt ud, men sådan er det ikke.
The famous philosopher Ludwig Wittgenstein saw this very clearly.
Og Ludwig Wittgenstein, han så det meget tydeligt.
And he said, the greatest deception of modernism,
og han sagde, det største, modernismens største bedrag,
is that the laws of nature explain the appearances in nature when they do not.
Ja, når vi siger, at naturlovene forklarer det, vi ser i naturen, når de faktisk ikke gør det.
So, what I'm suggesting to you is, one of the great confusions that drives this debate is the nature of explanation itself.
Så jeg vil sige, at noget af det, der driver denne forvirring, der er hele forholdet omkring forklaringer.
We do not have to choose between God and science.
Vi bliver ikke nødt til at vælge mellem Gud og videnskaben.
The idea that science has buried God is just foolish.
Så den tanke, at videnskaben har begravet Gud, er tåbelig.
Now let me come to this next question. Do you believe that finding the truth is the main objective to the scientist, and is it possible?
Så næste spørgsmål er, tror du, at det at finde sandheden er videnskabsmandens hovedformål, og er det overhovedet muligt?
I think that finding the truth is the main objective for most scientists I know.
Jeg tror, at det at finde sandheden er hovedmålet for de fleste af de videnskabsfolk, jeg kender.
But I also discovered that really great scientists are quite modest about the truth.
Men jeg har også erfaring for, at de store videnskabsfolk er meget beskedne, hvad sandhed angår.
They are not postmodern certainly about truth.
De er ikke postmoderne omkring sandheden.
They may be postmodern in other areas of life, such as ethics and morality, but they are usually not postmodern in respect of truth. In science, sorry.
Det kan være, at de er postmoderne omkring etik og moral og alt muligt, men i hvert fald ikke omkring videnskab.
Because, of course, there's no point in doing science if you don't believe that there is truth to be found.
For der er ikke nogen idé i videnskab, hvis ikke man tror, at der er en sandhed derude, man kan finde.
And the usual view is that of critical realism.
Og det sædvanlige opfattelse hedder noget med kritisk realisme.
That is, there's truth out there to be found.
Der er en sandhed derude, som vi kan finde.
But we haven't quite got there yet.
Men vi er ikke nået derud endnu.
Aristotle was quite good.
Aristoteles, han var fin.
But Galileo was better.
Men Galileo, han var bedre.
And Kepler was better than that.
Kepler, han trumfede.
And Newton got a bit further.
Og så Newton, han kom endnu længere.
And Einstein got even further.
Og Einstein kom endnu længere.
So we are approaching the truth.
Så vi nærmer os sandheden.
But there may well be and have to be improvements to Einstein.
Men det vi må finde forbedringer til Einsteins modeller.
But it's a very interesting question.
Men det er meget interessant.
And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, I saw these questions this evening for the first time.
Jeg så de her spørgsmål lige nu.
And that's the way I like it, actually.
Og det er jo sådan, jeg bedst kan lide det.
Because there's an important subtext to the question.
For der er en meget vigtig underliggende mening i det her spørgsmål.
Because the idea that there is truth out there that can be approximately found by human intelligence is very interesting indeed.
For bare tanken om, at der findes en sandhed, som man kan nærme sig med menneskelig intelligens, ja, den tanke er meget interessant.
This is one of the arguments of my book.
Det er et af argumenterne i min bog.
I'll bring into that the fifth question, which is how can we know that God exists?
Næste spørgsmål, hvordan kan vi vide, at Gud findes?
Well, for many reasons, but think about this one.
Der er mange grunde, men tænk på denne.
One of the things that is central to science,
en af de mest centrale ting i videnskaben,
is faith.
Er tro.
Now, that does not always strike people as being correct.
Det er ikke normalt det, folk tænker på, når de tænker på videnskab.
Because the new atheists, led by Richard Dawkins, have redefined the concept of faith.
For de nye ateismen under førerskab af Richard Dawkins har omdefineret tro.
They think that faith is a religious word, number one.
For det første mener de, at tro er et religiøst ord.
And that it means believing where there is no evidence, number two.
Og for det andet, at det betyder at tro det, som man ikke kan bevise.
They are wrong on both.
Og de er i begge tilfælde forkert på den.
Dangerously wrong.
I farlig grad.
What they are describing is what we normally call blind faith.
Det, som de beskriver, det er det, som vi normalt kalder blind tro, blind tillid.
The Christian faith is not blind, ladies and gentlemen.
Men den kristne tro, den er ikke blind.
You can prove that very easily.
Det er meget nemt at bevise.
In the Gospel of John, towards the end, he explains why he writes his gospel.
Johannes evangeliet til sidst i Johannes evangeliet forklarer han hvorfor han skriver evangeliet.
Many other things Jesus did in the presence of his disciples which are not written in this book.
Jesus gjorde mange andre ting i sin overværelse af sine disciple, som ikke står i denne bog.
But these are written,
men dette er skrevet, skriver han så.
In order that you might believe, have faith, that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that believing you might have life in his name.
For at I må tro, at Jesus er Messias, Guds søn, og at I gennem tro må få livet i hans navn.
In other words, John's gospel is evidence on which faith is based.
Med andre ord kan vi sige, at Johannes evangeliet er bevismateriale på hvilken vi kan bygge vores tro.
Everybody understands what evidence-based faith means these days.
Nu om dagen forstår vi alle hvad evidensbaseret tro betyder.
Or perhaps you've forgotten the financial crisis.
Eller måske har I glemt finanskrisen allerede.
In Britain at least we thought we could believe in trust the bankers.
I England i hvert fald, der troede vi at vi kunne tro på bankerne.
And then the markets collapsed and financial system froze.
Så kollapsede bankerne og finanssystemet frøs fast.
Why did it freeze?
Hvorfor frøs det?
Because a basis for trust was lost.
For der manglede, altså hele grundlaget for tilliden til bankerne var væk.
And until we recover a basis for trust, it will remain frozen.
Og indtil vi genskaber tilliden til bankerne, så vil forholdet være frosset fast.
There are virtually no people in Europe left who do not understand evidence-based faith.
I Europa er der næsten ingen tilbage, som ikke forstår evidensbaseret tro.
I point out, ladies and gentlemen, again, other faiths must speak for themselves, but the Christian faith is evidence-based.
Andre trosretninger må tale for sig selv, men den kristne tro er evidensbaseret, altså baseret på beviser.
That's point number one.
Det er mit første punkt.
But point number two,
andet punkt,
is that faith is essential to science.
Er, at troen er essentiel, er meget vigtig for videnskaben.
Faith in what?
Tro på hvad?
Well, Einstein perhaps put it best of all.
Måske var det Einstein, der sagde det bedst.
It's faith in the rational intelligibility of the universe. Faith that the universe can be understood by the human mind.
Troen på, at universet kan forstås af det menneskelige hjerne.
You've got to believe that in order to do science. Think about it.
Det må vi tro på, hvis vi overhovedet vil dyrke videnskab.
But why would I believe that?
Men hvorfor skulle jeg tro på det?
Why would you believe that science can be done?
Hvorfor skal man overhovedet tro på,
I mean, think about it for a moment.
Udføre videnskab.
What do you do science with?
Hvad udfører man videnskab med?
Well, you do it with the mind.
Det gør man med hovedet.
But what is the mind?
Men hvad er
Now let me wear my atheist hat for a moment.
Nu tager jeg lige min ateist hat på et øjeblik.
What is the mind?
Hvad er hjernen?
It is the brain.
Det er hjernen.
What is the... You've got it.
I don't really have a good word for mind.
I see a problem, ladies and gentlemen. But let's not worry about it because it doesn't affect the end result.
Det skal nok blive godt.
What is the brain stroke mind?
Hvad er hjernen eller vores sind?
It is the end product of a mindless, unguided natural process.
Det er slutproduktet af en hjerneløs bevægelse hen imod et
an unguided, yeah, mindless process.
Ja. Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
He looks skeptical.
En ustyret proces.
Yeah. Now, let me put it to you.
And lad mig sige dette.
You all use computers.
I bruger alle sammen computere.
You use them tomorrow morning.
Og i morgen tidlig.
If you knew that your computer was the end product of a mindless, unguided process, would you trust it?
Vil du stole på din computer, hvis du vidste, at det var slutproduktet af en uledet, ustyret proces?
Of course not.
Nej.
It seems that atheism is a massive problem with science.
Så ateisterne har faktisk et problem med selve videnskaben.
You see, ladies and gentlemen, my biggest objection to atheism.
Så I kan se, eller min største anke overfor ateismen er.
It's not simply because I'm a Christian.
Og det er ikke kun fordi jeg er kristen.
It is because I'm a scientist.
Men fordi jeg er videnskabsmand.
And atheism seems to me to undermine the rationality that I need to do science.
Og ateismen ser ud til at underminere det rationale, der ligger bag selve videnskaben.
Now that argument goes back, interestingly, to Darwin himself.
Det argument kan vi hente helt tilbage fra Darwin, interessant nok.
He writes in The Origin of Species something roughly like this.
For i Artens Oprindelse, der skriver han nogenlunde sådan.
I sometimes wonder
Jeg tænker nogle gange,
how it is possible to trust the human mind when it has come from minds so lowly as the minds of much more primitive animals.
Hvordan vi overhovedet kan stole på, hvad der foregår op i hovedet på os, når vi ved, at vi kommer fra så lavere stående individer og dyr.
That argument has been developed in recent days.
Og det er et argument, som er blevet udviklet.
Interestingly enough, by a very famous philosopher who is an atheist, Thomas Nagel of New York.
Som interessant nok er udviklet af en meget berømt ateist, Michael Nagel.
In a fascinating book called Mind and Cosmos.
I en meget interessant bog, der hedder Sindet og Kosmos.
It has also been developed by the philosopher Alvin Plantinga in America.
Udviklet af en anden amerikaner.
And of course C.S. Lewis got it long ago.
Og C.S. Lewis, han forstod det selvfølgelig for længe siden.
Atheism gives me no reason to do science whatsoever.
I ateismen finder jeg ingen grund til at dyrke videnskab.
Christianity does.
Men i kristendommen gør jeg.
It tells me that the universe out there,
for den siger at universet derude,
was made by the same God who invented the mind in here.
Er skabt af den samme Gud, som opfandt din hjerne.
And the interesting thing is, it's that idea that was the motor that drove modern science in the 16th and 17th centuries.
Det er jo interessant nok at tænke på, at det er netop den idé, den tanke, som drev videnskaben frem i den 16. og 17. århundrede.
Lewis puts it very simply and clearly.
C.S. Lewis siger det meget tydeligt.
Men became scientific. Why? Because they believed in the laws of nature.
Mennesket blev videnskabeligt indstillet.
So,
because
they expected law in nature.
Fordi de forventede lovmæssighed i naturen.
And they expected law in nature because they believed in a lawgiver.
Og de forventede lovmæssighed i naturen, fordi de troede på lovgiveren.
And for that reason, I very often say in public these days.
Og derfor siger jeg tit offentligt.
How could I possibly be ashamed of being both a Christian and a scientist?
Hvordan kunne jeg nogensinde finde på at skamme mig over at være både kristen og en videnskabsmand?
When arguably Christianity gave me my subject.
Når det rent faktisk er kristendom, der gav mig mit emne og mit metier.
It's atheism it doesn't fit with at all.
Det er ateismen, der ikke passer ind.
Science fits perfectly with Christianity, but not with atheism.
Videnskaben og kristendommen går hånd i hånd, men ikke hånd
that
i hånd med
ateismen. That is of course the opposite of what we are often told.
Og det er selvfølgelig det modsatte af det, vi som regel får fortalt.
And this brings me to question 4, which is it possible to separate science from ideology?
Det fører mig til spørgsmål 4. Er det muligt at adskille videnskaben fra ideologi?
The answer is mostly yes.
Ja, er svaret.
For most working scientists,
som regel, og for
the
de
kind
fleste
of questions that I deal with in my book are not part of their everyday work.
Som regel er de spørgsmål, jeg beskæftiger mig med i bogen, ikke en del af videnskabsfolks daglige arbejde.
When you are trying to understand what something is made of, for instance.
Når man for eksempel prøver at forstå, hvad noget er lavet af.
Or how it works.
Eller hvordan det fungerer.
Your particular worldview plays probably very little role.
Så spiller det stort set ingen rolle, hvilket verdensbillede du ellers har.
But there is one area of science where these questions become very important.
Men der er et område i videnskaben, hvor disse spørgsmål bliver meget vigtige.
It's a very controversial area.
Det er et meget kontroversielt område.
It has to do with the origin of life and its development.
Nemlig med livets oprindelse og livets udvikling.
Suppose I am an atheist again.
Hvis jeg nu igen er ateist.
And I'm told that there is no God.
For at vide, at der ikke findes nogen Gud.
And I'm given 10 minutes to come up with a theory of how life began.
Og jeg får 10 minutter til at komme med en teori om, hvordan livet opstod.
What am I going to say?
Hvad vil jeg så sige?
Well, it's pretty obvious what I'm going to say, isn't it?
Det er måske meget klart, hvad jeg vil sige.
Since there is no transcendent God.
Eftersom der ikke er en Gud overalt.
Life must have somehow generated itself.
Så må livet være opstået på en måde af sig selv.
So that somehow the basic chemicals came together and produced the first life, and that developed and so on.
grundlæggende kemikalier og stoffer fandt sammen og dannede det første liv.
That idea is very old.
Det er en meget gammel idé.
And if you want to read one of the best examples of it, you should read Lucretius' De Rerum Natura on the Nature of the Physical Universe, written many centuries ago.
Og for den bedste eller første forklaring af det skal I læse en bog, der er skrevet på latin for flere århundreder siden.
And the very interesting thing about Lucretius is this.
Og det interessante ved Lucretius er,
he got everything that Darwin got except one thing.
At han fik fandt ud af alt det, som Darwin han fandt ud af.
And he deduced it not from observation but from pure materialistic philosophy.
Undtagen en ting, og det fandt han ud af udelukkende på baggrund af en materialistisk filosofi.
That is why, ladies and gentlemen, there is such controversy over this matter.
Og det er derfor, at der er så stor kontrovers omkring dette emne.
Because this matter of life, its origin and development,
for spørgsmålet om livets oprindelse og udvikling,
sits in a unique place in the whole realm of science.
Har en meget central og unik plads i videnskaben.
You cannot deduce Einstein's equations or Newton's laws from a philosophical worldview, say an atheist or even a Christian one.
Man kan ikke komme frem til Einsteins eller Newtons ligninger bare ud fra et verdensbillede, uanset om det er ateistisk
you
eller kristen.
Do it.
Det kan man.
The only way to find those laws out is to look at the universe as impartially as possible.
Eneste måde at komme frem til det er ved at se på universet så upartisk som overhovedet muligt.
But you see, if you are an atheist,
men hvis man er ateist,
mass and energy must be able to generate life without any involvement of a transcendent God.
Der skal masse og energi kunne frembringe liv uden input fra en Gud.
And that is why the fact of evolution, as they call it, long preceded the theories.
Så det er faktisk derfor, at udviklingslæren eller kendskærningerne omkring udviklingen faktisk gik forud for teorierne.
Now this is a very big topic.
Og det er et stort emne.
That's why I wrote the book.
Og det er selvfølgelig derfor, jeg skrev en bog om det.
Because people kept asking me how I respond to this whole question as a mathematician.
Så fordi folk blev ved med at spørge mig, hvordan jeg stod over, hvordan jeg stillede mig over for det her spørgsmål som matematiker.
Now there's a final question here.
Og der er et spørgsmål til.
It says John Lennon sang a song, Imagine.
John Lennon sang denne sang, Imagine.
Yes, you've all probably heard that song.
Jeg har hørt den.
Imagine there's no religion.
Forestil jer, der er ingen religion.
Imagine there's no Northern Ireland. What a thing to imagine. There's no.
Forestil jer, der ikke findes et Nordirland.
Imagine there's no Taliban, etc., etc.
Ingen Taliban, ingenting.
But as you've noticed, ladies and gentlemen, I am not John Lennon.
Men som I har bemærket, er jeg ikke John Lennon.
I am happy to say I'm John Lennox.
Jeg er glad for at kunne meddele, at jeg er John Lennox.
And the single letter difference is very important.
Det enkelte bogstavs forskel er meget vigtig.
Because I've also written a song.
For jeg har også skrevet en sang.
And it's also called Imagine.
Og den hedder også Imagine. Forestil dig.
Imagine a world with no atheism.
Forestil jer en verden uden ateisme.
Why is it that in the books written against God they do not put the other side?
I de bøger, der bliver skrevet imod Gud, hvorfor skriver de så ikke om det andet? Denne.
That little book that I have written here is about science and God.
Den lille bog, jeg har skrevet her, handler om videnskaben og Gud.
I have since written another one.
Men jeg har skrevet en anden også.
About morality and God.
Om moral og Gud.
And the fact that the new atheists have, in a way, added to their scientific criticism of God, a moral critique of God.
Og fordi at de nye ateister, ud over deres videnskabelige argumenter imod Gud, har tilføjet et moralsk argument imod Gud.
And I'm afraid you will not read anything about that in the book that you see up there.
Det finder I desværre ikke noget om i den bog her.
But it is an immensely important question.
Men det er et meget vigtigt spørgsmål.
Because they blame religion.
Fordi skyder skylden på religionen.
For evil in our world.
For alt det onde i verden.
Now that's a serious challenge, isn't it?
Det er en alvorlig udfordring.
Especially for me.
Særligt for mig.
I come from a country that has got a reputation for sectarian violence.
For jeg kommer fra et land, der har et rygte, som er et ry for sekterisk vold.
And if you want to know how I respond to that question,
og hvis I vil vide, hvordan jeg svarer på det spørgsmål,
you will have to ask me.
Så må I spørge mig.
Because this clock has gone past the time when I'm supposed to stop.
For jeg skal holde inde nu.
So I'm going to stop.
Så det vil
Thank
jeg
you very much. Thank you.
Vi holder en kort pause, og så samler vi spørgsmålene ind. Hvis ikke jeg har skrevet dem nu, så skynd jer, og så vil John Lennox selv sortere i spørgsmålene. Hvad skal vi sige? 10 minutter. Læg spørgsmålene tæt ved udgangen, eller lad dem ligge. Vi samler dem sammen og sorterer dem under pausen. På gensyn. Så vær venlig at tage plads igen.
Okay. Well now, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for all these questions.
Mange tak for alle de her spørgsmål.
Most of them deserve a lecture.
De fleste af dem ligger der helt foredrag i.
And I cannot do that.
Det kan jeg desværre ikke gøre.
So we've got to accept one or two ground rules for this Q&A.
Så vi må acceptere nogle grundregler for det her spørgsmålssession.
And that is that within the limitations of the time, all I can do is make one or two, I hope, helpful comments on how I would begin to approach these questions.
Så jeg samler spørgsmålene sammen i grupper og begynder at svare på dem.
Because I do that quite deliberately, one, because there isn't the time, but secondly, it is so important that we each learn to work through our own questions.
Det gør jeg både fordi, at der ikke er tid, men det er også vigtigt for en selv at arbejde igennem sine egne spørgsmål.
And come to answers that are not simply based on the authority of someone standing up in public and talking.
Og finde frem til svar, som ikke bare er baseret på en anden mands autoritet.
So all I'm going to do is to let you see a little bit of how I think about these things.
Så jeg vil vise jer, hvordan jeg tænker om nogle af de her ting.
And I hope you will agree with allowing me to do that.
Jeg håber, I er enige med min måde at gøre det her på.
Now the first question was about John's gospel, and is it that John is simply saying that these things were the basis of his own belief, or does it go beyond that?
Siger Johannes ikke bare, at det her var bevis på var grunden til at han selv troede, eller går det ud over det?
I think it is both.
Jeg tror det er begge dele.
It is clearly John is stating the reasons that brought him to believe.
Det er Johannes forklarer hvorfor han selv tror.
But that's not what he says.
Men det er ikke det der står.
He says these things are written that you might believe.
Der står disse ting er skrevet for at I må tro.
In other words, he believes that these things are chosen so that they might form the base for other people's faith.
Så han har udvalgt disse ting for at det må danne grundlag for andre menneskers tro.
They are the basis for my own faith, for instance.
Det er for eksempel grundlaget for min egen tro.
The Gospel of John and the way it deals with evidence about Jesus has been enormously important for me in my own spiritual life.
Johannes evangeliet og den måde som Johannes evangeliet opbygger troen har været umådeligt vigtig for mig i mit eget liv.
Now of course here I am tempted to give you 20 lectures on the Gospel of John.
Nu er jeg selvfølgelig fristet til at komme med 20 prædikener over Johannes.
But I've been taught not to give in to temptation, so I won't.
Men jeg beder selv om ikke at blive ledt i fristelse, så det gør jeg ikke.
This is a terse. It's not a question, it's a command.
Det er en kommando, snarere end et
spørgsmål. Answer your last question about morality.
Besvar dit sidste eget spørgsmål om moralitet, moral.
So let me just come to the heart of this question that I often get because I come from Northern Ireland.
Og det er jo et spørgsmål jeg tit får, fordi jeg kommer fra Nordirland.
What do I think of the sectarian violence?
Hvad mener jeg om den sekteriske vold der?
I'm ashamed of it.
Jeg skammer mig over den.
Utterly and completely ashamed of it as a Christian.
Som kristen er jeg virkelig dybt skammer mig dybt over den.
But now I want to explain why I'm ashamed of it.
Og det vil jeg forklare hvorfor.
I'm ashamed of it because our Lord himself forbade violence.
Jeg skammer mig, fordi Herren Jesus selv forbød vold.
So the people who take weapons to defend Christ or his message.
Så folk der tager våben i hånd for at forsvare Kristus og evangeliet,
are not following him, they're disobeying him.
De følger ham ikke, de gør ikke hans vilje.
Now here is the irony of this.
Her er ironien.
I had two debates with the late Christopher Hitchens, who's one of the world's very famous atheists.
Jeg har haft to debatter med den afdøde Christopher Hitchens, som er en berømt ateist, eller hvad?
And he brought up this objection very powerfully.
Og han kom med den her indvending meget stærkt.
I said to him, Christopher, it's very clear you've never read the New Testament seriously.
Og jeg sagde til ham, Christopher, det er meget tydeligt for mig, at du aldrig har seriøst læst det Nye Testamente.
For the simple reason that the things that you say against violence and religion are what Jesus himself said.
For det, som du udtaler imod vold og imod religion, det er, hvad Jesus selv har sagt.
If you'd read the New Testament instead of fighting Jesus, you'd be agreeing with him.
Hvis du havde læst det Nye Testamente i stedet for at slås med Jesus, så
and here,
havde du været enig med ham.
Here is one of the greatest ironies in history.
Og det er en af de store ironier i historien.
Do you know why Jesus was put on trial?
Ved I, hvorfor Jesus blev stillet for en domstol?
What was the accusation?
Hvad var anklagen imod ham?
It was terrorism.
Det var terrorisme.
In other words, the very thing that the new atheists accuse Christians of is the thing our Lord was put on trial for. Accused of fomenting political violence.
Så det som Jesus han blev sat stillet for en dommer for, det er det som ateisterne anklager de kristne for at gøre. Jesus blev anklaget for at indstifte politisk uro.
And what was the result of the trial?
Og hvad var resultatet af den her dom?
The Roman governor Pilate, who was terrified of anybody claiming to be a terrorist.
Den romerske guvernør Pilatus, som var bange for alle, som stillede sig op som terrorister,
said that Jesus was innocent.
Sagde, at Jesus var uskyldig.
Because it's obvious, ladies and gentlemen, that the one thing you cannot do with violence is impose truth.
For det er jo tydeligt, at det man ikke kan gøre med vold er at indføre sandhed.
Especially when it's truth about forgiveness, the love of God, eternal life and reconciliation and peace.
Særligt når sandheden handler om evigt liv og kærlighed og fred og så videre.
So when I meet this question, I find it's a wonderful opportunity to explain what Christ actually stood for.
Så når jeg får et spørgsmål som dette, så er det en vidunderlig anledning til at fortælle, hvad Kristus faktisk står for.
The next question is, does Richard Dawkins have answers to your challenges to his views?
Spørgsmålet er, har Richard Dawkins nogle svar på din kritik og din udfordring og hans synspunkter?
Well, if he has, I haven't really noticed them.
Hvis han har, så har jeg ikke rigtig bemærket det.
Of course he thinks he has.
Han tror, han har.
And I don't think he has.
Men det tror jeg.
And that's why, ladies and gentlemen, when I go into these public debates, I don't go into them to win an argument.
Og det er derfor, jeg ikke går ind i de her offentlige debatter for at vinde et argument.
If you debate simply to win,
hvis man bare går ind i en debat for at vinde,
you are likely simply to use tricks of rhetoric.
Så bruger man bare retoriske trick og virkemidler,
rather than solid argument.
I stedet for solide argumenter.
So I have more faith in the general public than that, so what I do is to go out there and try and state what I believe to be true and let the people judge.
Og jeg har mere tillid til mit publikum end som så jeg går bare ud og præsenterer mine argumenter og lader det være op til publikum at tage stilling.
I try to take these atheists very seriously.
Prøver at tage ateisterne og ateismen meget alvorligt.
I spent a large part of my life studying what they write.
Jeg har brugt meget tid, det største del af mit liv på at studere, hvad de skriver.
What concerns me about them is that they do not do the same to the Christian argument.
Det, der bekymrer mig, er, at de ikke gør det samme over for det kristne evangelium.
They claim to be intellectuals.
De siger, de er intellektuelle.
Well, I think that's a very interesting question to ask.
Men det mener jeg er at strække den lidt.
Because if you are a genuine intellectual, when you go outside your own field, as I'm doing tonight, by the way,
For hvis man er virkelig er en intellektuel og bevæger sig ud for sit, uden for sit eget felt, som jeg for eksempel gør,
the one basic rule is you must take the opposition case at its best, not at its worst.
Så er der en grundregel, der siger, at man må tage modstanderens sag og se på den i det bedste lys i stedet for det modsatte.
So I meet an atheist scientist, and he says to me in debate, there is no evidence that Jesus Christ existed.
Så møder jeg den her ateistiske intellektuel, og han siger i en debat, at der ikke er noget evidens eller bevis for, at Jesus han rent faktisk fandtes.
I say, what historians have you consulted?
Så spørger jeg, hvilke historikere har du spurgt om det?
You're not a historian, nor am I.
Du er ikke historiker, jeg er
so
ikke
I've
historiker.
Read the historians, have you?
Så jeg har læst historien.
I cannot find a single eminent ancient historian who would say what you're saying.
Og jeg har aldrig kommet ind, mødt nogen historiker, som siger det, du siger.
That proves that that particular person is not really interested in evidence, although they claim to be.
Og det beviser bare, at den her person ikke var interesseret i bevisførelse, selvom han faktisk siger, han er det.
Do you think there are intelligent creatures in other places of the universe?
Tror du på liv i rummet?
Do you know, ladies and gentlemen, what the greatest evidence for extraterrestrial intelligence is?
Ved I, hvad det største bevis på intelligent liv i rummet er?
They have not tried to contact us.
De har ikke prøvet at kontakte os.
Sorry, forgive me, but I couldn't resist that.
Kunne jeg ikke lige lade være med.
I was once on a radio program, it's still available on YouTube, I think, with Paul Davis, the famous physicist.
Jeg var engang i radioen sammen med Paul Davis, en berømt fysiker. Man kan stadig se det.
And he just written his book, Are We Alone in the Universe?
Han havde lige skrevet sin bog, Er vi alene i universet?
And he said, well, with his philosopher's hat on, he hoped we were not alone.
Og han sagde med sin filosofhat på, sagde han, at jeg håbede, at vi ikke er alene.
But with his scientific hat on, he thought we were most likely to be alone.
Men med sin videnskabelige hat på, sagde han, vi er sikkert alene.
So the moderator asked me, did I think there was any intelligence outside this earth?
Så ordstyrer spurgte mig, mener du, at der er intelligent liv udenfor?
I was tempted to say, I'm not sure how much there is on this earth.
But fristet til at betvivle tilstedeværelsen af intelligent liv her i universet, på jorden. Men
and I was slightly naughty, I must confess. I said to him, I know of at least one very great intelligence, and that's God.
Og jeg var fræt nok til at sige, jeg kender én intelligens, og det er Gud.
Of course there's extraterrestrial intelligence.
Der findes selvfølgelig intelligens ude i rummet.
And if we are Bible believers, we discover that there are angels and so on and so forth.
Og hvis vi tror på Bibelen, så tror vi, at der findes engle og sådan nogle væsener.
We know relatively little about them.
Vi ved ikke ret meget om dem.
But God hasn't told us everything about this universe, I assume.
Men Gud, tror jeg, har ikke fortalt alt om sit univers.
So that's enough about that.
Nok om det.
Now, has religion influenced modern culture to a point that we cannot exist without its foundations in society?
Har religionen påvirket den moderne kultur til i en sådan grad, at vi ikke kan eksistere uden dens grundlag under samfundet og lovgivning og så videre?
Well, that question really relates to the book I just mentioned to you about morality and ethics. It's called Gunning for God. It's a deliberately ambiguous title in English.
Og det hører med min seneste bog at gøre, som hedder Gunning for God, som heldigvis ikke er oversat.
But I'm going to mention it because I think it's very important.
Men jeg vil gerne nævne det her, fordi jeg mener, det er meget vigtigt.
I think it's vital for Christians to be aware just how much the Judeo-Christian heritage has contributed to the basic civilized laws and structures of modern Europe.
Jeg tror, det er utrolig vigtigt, at vi som kristne er klar over, hvor høj grad den jødisk-kristne livsholdning har påvirket det moderne samfund i dag.
Absolutely nothing to be ashamed of here.
Vi har intet at skamme os over.
Our universities, most of them, where did they come from?
Sorry.
Our universities, where did they come from?
Hvor kom vores universiteter fra, for eksempel?
I've just been visiting America, and every university I go to, I look up its motto in Latin.
Og på alle amerikanske universiteter, jeg har lige været derover, de har et motto.
And just like my own university in Oxford, the motto is a biblical one.
Og ligesom alle,
generally speaking.
Mit eget universitet i Oxford, der er motto taget fra Bibelen.
Because the universities were created by people who did not see a conflict between science and thought and Christianity.
Og det er fordi universiteterne blev grundlagt af folk, som ikke kunne se konflikten mellem troen og videnskaben.
One of the most interesting commentators in this is Jürgen Habermas.
Og en af de vigtigste kommentatorer i det her område er Jürgen Habermas.
He is rated as one of Germany's leading intellectuals, and he's an atheist.
Han er en af Tysklands førende intellektuelle ateister.
And in a book called Übergänge, Transitions, he says something like this.
Og i sin bog siger han noget i denne stil.
He says that when we look at human rights, civil rights, our institutions of law and education,
når vi ser på menneskerettigheder, vores borgerrettigheder og vores love og så videre,
they all trace their origin back to the Judeo-Christian heritage.
Så stammer de alle sammen tilbage fra vores jødisk-kristne kulturarv.
And then he says, to this day we have nothing else to draw from.
Og indtil i dag har vi intet andet at trække fra.
Everything else is only postmodern chatter. Postmoderne geschwätz.
Alt andet er bare postmoderne sludder, sniksnak.
That's very interesting for an atheist.
Det er meget interessant udsagn fra en ateist.
And not only that, he warns Europe.
Og ikke det alene, men han advarer også Europa.
Seriously warns them not to devalue religion.
Om at de skal ikke undervurdere religionen eller nedvurdere religionen.
Because if they do, they will remove a very quote important source of meaning for people.
For hvis de gør det, så vil de fjerne, og jeg citerer, en meget vigtig kilde til mening.
I could say a lot more about this.
Det kunne jeg sige meget mere om.
Because it seems to me to be a seriously important thing we need to think about.
For det er noget, det er vigtigt at tænke over.
See, ladies and gentlemen, if you get rid of God,
for hvis vi afskaffer Gud,
where are you going to find a base for morality and ethics?
Hvor finder vi så grundlaget for moral og etik?
There's only one source.
Der er én kilde.
That's suggested these days.
Som vi hører om i dag.
And that is science.
Det er i videnskaben.
But what ethics are you going to develop?
Men hvilken etik kan man udvikle på baggrund af videnskab?
Darwin observed ants and saw them cooperating.
Darwin studerede myrerne og så deres samarbejde.
And said there's a basis for altruism.
Og sagde, her er basis for altruisme.
But Spencer saw the survival, the struggle for the fittest, the survival of the fittest.
Og han så den stærkeste. Spencer så at den stærkeste overlever.
And we all know what has happened when that principle has been put into the ethical systems of our world.
Og vi ved alle, hvad der sker, når den stærkeste overlever bliver grundlaget for vores etik.
You can find a basis for any ethical system you care to have in biology.
Vi kan finde grundlaget for en hvilken som helst etisk moralsk baggrund du ønsker i naturen.
And if you remove the transcendent,
hvis du fjerner det der ligger over,
on what basis are you going to choose between them?
Hvilke baggrund skal du så bruge? Hvilket grundlag skal du bruge til at vælge, hvad du, hvilken etik du vil?
And I would go so far as to suggest that the moral confusion in Europe results from precisely this.
Og jeg tror, at den moralske forvirring, der hersker i Europa, er resultatet af dette.
If you teach young people for years in school,
hvis du i skoleforløbet underviser unge mennesker i,
that human beings are not special,
at mennesker ikke er særlige,
in the end they'll believe you.
Så tror de der til sidst.
Now that's how they're behaving today, isn't it?
Og det er også sådan, de opfører sig i dag, er det ikke?
That's a very serious thing. The devaluation of human beings.
Og det er en meget, altså nedvurdering af værdien af mennesket.
There are two great debates, ladies and gentlemen, not just one.
Der er to store debatter i gang her.
One of the great debates is about the status of the universe. Is it created or not?
En af de store debatter er universets status, er det skabt eller er det ikke?
The other is about the status of human life. Is it made in the image of God or not?
Den anden er det menneskelivets status, er det skabt i Guds billede, er det ikke?
Okay, well now there's a row of questions about different things. Let's see, there was another ethical question somewhere. Let me see where it's gone. Here it is. The common reply to the dilemma offered, that good is good because God commands it, or does God command it because it is good?
Det almindelige svar på dilemmaet, at det gode er godt, fordi Gud har befalet det, eller befaler Gud det gode, fordi han er Gud.
This is a very famous question coming from the ancient Greek world.
Det er et meget oprindeligt græsk berømt spørgsmål.
It comes from Plato and his Euthyphro.
Og det kommer fra Platon og hans Euthyphro.
Let's think about good.
Lad os tænke på det gode.
And God.
Og Gud.
Is good good because God commands it?
Er det gode godt fordi fordi Gud siger det?
Because if it is, then God could say that anything was good.
Fordi så kunne Gud sige at hvad som helst var godt.
Oh no, God commands it because it's good.
Nej, Gud siger det godt fordi det er godt.
Oh, then good is higher than God.
Så er det gode højere end Gud.
Therefore there's no God.
Derfor er der ingen Gud.
Well, not so fast, I think.
Så hurtigt skal det ikke gå.
Now, there have been volumes written on this. If you want to look this up, just Google Euthyphro, if you can spell it.
Prøv at google det, han siger. Så finder I masser af materiale om det.
I think the answer to it is to be seen along these lines.
Og jeg tror, svaret ligger nogenlunde som følger.
It results from a confusion between God's will and his character.
Det stammer fra forvirring mellem hvad er Guds vilje og hvad er Guds karakter.
God does not define good arbitrarily.
Gud bestemmer ikke hvad der er godt.
Because God in his own character and nature is the definition of good.
For Gud er i sig selv og i sin egen karakter definitionen på det gode.
And therefore his will commands what is consistent with his own nature.
Så derfor hans vilje befaler hvad der stemmer overens med hans egen natur.
And you cannot drive a wedge in between the two.
Man kan ikke drive en kile ind imellem de to ting.
So I said just little initial thoughts.
Strø tanker om dette.
Now, do you believe in the Big Bang?
Tror du på Big Bang?
Now this is a major topic.
Det er et større spørgsmål.
Again, I discuss it a bit in this book.
Jeg har også omtalt det i bogen.
And I have just been at CERN in Geneva discussing these questions from a Christian perspective with the leading scientists involved in the Higgs boson experiment.
Og jeg har lige været i CERN for at diskutere det med de førende videnskabsmænd, der behandler spørgsmålet om Higgs boson.
And that was very interesting.
Det var meget interessant.
One of the world's leading scientists risked writing a little article in Newsweek magazine.
Og der er en af disse videnskabsfolk, der skrev en lille artikel i Newsweek,
where he wrote the Higgs boson is arguably more important than God.
Hvor han skrev at Higgs boson er faktisk måske mere vigtig end Gud.
So I wrote a little article for the Times newspaper.
Så jeg skrev en lille artikel i The Times.
And I said the Higgs boson is arguably more important than God for what?
Og hvor jeg skrev Higgs boson kan man sige er mere vigtig end Gud til hvad?
For explaining particle physics certainly.
Ja, til at forklare elementar partikelfysik.
But for explaining why there is a universe at all in which particle physics can be done, I don't think so.
Men ikke til det er ikke særlig velegnet til spørgsmål om hvorfor universet findes overhovedet.
So I ended my article by saying this. So what shall we say about the Higgs boson?
Så jeg sluttede af med at skrive, så hvad skal vi sige om Higgs boson?
Well, Higgs predicted it.
Higgs forudsagde den.
CERN discovered it.
CERN har opdaget den.
And God invented it.
Og Gud opfandt den.
And we celebrate CERN and Higgs.
Og vi fejrer CERN og Higgs.
What about celebrating God?
Men hvad med at fejre Gud?
That was slightly naughty, wasn't it?
Det var lidt frækt, men
but it got a good response out there. How foolish some people are. Yeah. Now, what is the Big Bang theory?
Hvad er Big Bang teorien?
The words Big Bang come from Fred Hoyle.
Det er Fred Hoyle, der har skabt udtrykket.
He didn't like it.
Og han brød sig ikke
Hoyle
selv meget om det.
Was a little bit of a disciple of Aristotle. He believed in the steady state universe.
Hoyle var faktisk en elev af Aristoteles. Han troede på det, der hedder steady state universum.
And the idea of a beginning, he did not like.
Og han brød sig ikke om tanken om en begyndelse.
Indeed, this is the most interesting thing.
Det er faktisk rigtig interessant.
I remember very well in the 1960s in Cambridge when the first evidence started coming in of a beginning to space-time.
Jeg kan huske i begyndelsen af 60'erne i Cambridge, hvor de første beviser tikkede ind på, at der var en begyndelse på tid og rum.
It was resisted fiercely by some of the leading members of the Scientific Academy in the United Kingdom.
Og der var flere ledende medlemmer af de videnskabelige selskaber i Storbritannien, der var kæmpet indædt imod de her.
And I reminded the people in CERN why.
Og jeg mindede folk nede i CERN om, hvorfor de gjorde det.
The editor of Nature, the most famous scientific magazine in the world.
Der var en redaktør for Nature, som er det mest berømte naturvidenskabelige magasin.
He said we must not listen to this new theory.
Han sagde dengang, vi skal ikke lytte til denne nye teori.
Because it will give too much support to people who believe Genesis.
Fordi det giver alt for meget støtte til folk, som tror på første Mosebog og skabelsen.
Fascinating, isn't it?
Fascinerende.
It was an ideological response based on atheism.
Det var et ideologisk svar, som var baseret i ateismen.
Now I know some Christians are concerned about Big Bang.
Jeg ved, der nu er nogle kristne, som er bekymret for Big Bang.
It is a label on a mystery.
It's a label.
A label, an etiquette on a mystery.
No, det er en etiket på et mysterium.
It is simply saying there was a beginning to space-time.
Det betyder bare, at der var en begyndelse.
And as I told, I said this to the folks in Geneva.
Det sagde jeg også nede i Genève.
I said, isn't it very interesting?
Er det ikke meget interessant?
That many of you think the Bible is valueless. When it comes to thinking about the physical universe.
Der er mange, så mange af jer tror, at Bibelen ingen værdi har, når det drejer sig om det fysiske univers.
Now I admit there is the whole of the Bible is not dedicated to science. Of course it isn't.
Jeg ved godt, at Bibelen ikke er en videnskabelig bog som sådan.
But it does talk about the same universe that physics and astrophysics study.
Men den taler dog om det samme univers, som vi studerer i dag.
And it makes this comment.
Og den har den her,
in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.
Og der står, i begyndelsen skabte Gud himlen og jorden.
Now I said, if you'd listened to that a bit earlier, instead of listening to Aristotle for centuries.
Så jeg sagde, hvis I havde lyttet til det, i stedet for at have lyttet til Aristoteles igennem århundreder.
You might just have looked for evidence that there was a beginning a little bit earlier, mightn't you?
Så I måske let efter en begyndelse lidt tidligere.
People say to me, the Bible is irrelevant because you can make no predictions based on it. Of course you can. Not many, but you can.
Folk siger til mig, at Bibelen ingen værdi har, fordi man ikke kan forudsige noget ud fra den.
And one of them is, there was a beginning.
Men det kan man godt, og det var, at der var en begyndelse.
Now I can't at this time at night break off into cosmology, ladies and gentlemen, much as I like to.
Jeg kunne godt tænke mig at fortælle mere om kosmologi, men det kan jeg ikke.
Because there is utter desperation at the moment, it seems to me, by the quality of what is being written.
For at dømme ud fra den kvaliteten af det, der bliver skrevet, så er der en desperation derude.
Of trying to explain, without God, how you get a universe from nothing.
Hvor man, når det drejer sig om at forklare, uden Gud, hvordan man får et univers ud af ingenting.
It's the old question of Leibniz. Why is there something rather than nothing?
Det er Leibniz's gamle spørgsmål. Hvorfor kommer, er der noget ud af intet?
And if you want to get anywhere with it, apparently you have to redefine nothing.
Og så bliver man tilsyneladende nødt til at omdefinere ingenting.
I've read a whole string of books in the last few weeks, all about nothing.
Jeg har læst en hel række bøger
I have met some of the most astonishing statements I've ever read in my life.
Jeg har kommet over nogle virkelig utrolige udtryk.
Let me try two of them on you.
Jeg prøver lige to af dem af på jer.
This is Lawrence Krauss, leading physicist in America.
En ledende fysiker, Lawrence Krauss i USA.
Because something is physical, nothing must be physical as well.
Fordi noget er fysisk, så må intet være fysisk også.
That's absurd.
Det giver ingen mening.
But it gets worse.
Men det bliver værre nu.
Let's listen to Stephen Hawking.
Stephen Hawking siger,
because there is a law of gravity,
fordi vi har tyngdeloven,
the universe can and will create itself from nothing.
Så kan universet og vil universet skabe sig selv ud fra intet.
That is the heart of his book with Leonard Mlodinow, The Grand Design. It's a major best-selling book.
Det er grundlaget for, det er tesen bag bogen The Grand Design, han har skrevet sammen med en russer.
Now I'm very interested in logic. I hope you are. And it's almost too late for logic. You should stop logic at 9 o'clock.
Jeg ved godt, man skal være logisk efter klokken 9 om
aftenen. But you're a very intelligent audience, so I'm going to risk a bit of logic.
Jeg prøver at risikere lidt logik.
Just think of that statement. This is the heart of his book, mind you, a best-selling book by a world-famous author. Because there is a law of gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing.
Så hjertet i argumentet på denne bestseller er, at fordi der er en tyngdelov, så vil, kan og vil universet skabe sig selv ud fra intet.
Because there is a law of gravity.
Fordi der er en tyngdekraft.
That is, there is something.
Det vil sige, der er noget.
The universe will create itself from nothing.
Så skaber universet sig selv fra intet.
Contradiction number one.
Den første modsætning.
But it's even worse.
Udsigelse, det giver værre.
The universe will create itself.
Universet skaber sig selv.
Let's think of language.
Lad os tænke lidt på noget
semantik. If I say to you, X creates Y, what does that mean?
Hvis jeg siger, X skaber Y, hvad betyder
det? It means
det?
That I assume X in order to explain the existence of Y.
Jeg antager X for, at Y kan blive til.
So if I say X creates X,
så hvis jeg siger, X skaber X,
I assume X to explain the existence of X.
Så antager jeg, X findes for, at X skal findes.
And what does that prove?
Og hvad beviser det?
It proves that nonsense remains nonsense, even if a, even if a world-famous scientist talks it.
Det betyder, at nonsens forbliver nonsens, uanset hvem der siger det.
But it's even worse than that.
Men det giver endnu værre.
This is amazing, isn't it? Because there is a law of gravity.
Fordi der er en tyngde lov.
Not gravity itself.
Ikke tyngde.
But what would a law of gravity mean if gravity doesn't exist?
Men hvad vil en tyngdelov være værd uden tyngde?
Laws don't create anything.
Love skaber intet.
Do you know those famous laws of motion? Billiard balls, Newton, all that kind of thing?
Bevægelseslovene, Newtons lov, billiardkugler og alt det her.
Newton's laws never moved a billiard ball in the history of the universe.
Men Newtons lov har aldrig bevæget en billiardkugle i universets historie.
People with a queue do that.
Men det er mennesker med køer.
The law doesn't do anything.
Loven i sig selv.
Now here's a challenge if you can't sleep tonight.
Her er en udfordring, hvis du ligger.
Try and construct a sentence in Danish with three levels of self-contradiction built into it.
Prøv at danne en sætning på dansk, der indeholder tre selvmodsigelser i sig selv. Tre lag af selvmodsigelse.
Now, let's come to more questions. Do you believe the Bible word for word?
Tror du på Bibelen? Bogstaveligt.
How old do you believe the earth is?
Hvor gammel tror du jorden er?
Do you believe in a creation in 7 days or in theistic evolution?
Tror du på jorden er skabt på syv dage eller på en teistisk evolution?
It's 9:02, you see. Let me just say something about this, but not much.
Lad mig sige lidt om dette.
The question of literal is a very important question.
Om man skal opfatte det bogstaveligt er
and
meget vigtigt.
And it causes a lot of unnecessary difficulty.
Det skaber en masse unødvendige problemer.
Because it is an inadequate word.
Fordi det ikke er et ordentligt ord.
Do I take the Bible literally?
Anser jeg Bibelen som sand bogstav for bogstav, så er den bogstaveligt.
Well, how do you define literally?
Hvad betyder bogstaveligt?
Jesus said, I am the door.
Jesus sagde, jeg er døren.
Was he made of wood or metal or plastic?
Var han metal, jern eller
None of us take that literally.
Der er ingen af os, der opfatter det bogstaveligt.
It's a metaphor.
Det er en metafor.
And I wish that people were taught a bit of C.S. Lewis on this point.
Jeg vil ønske at folk læste lidt mere C.S. Lewis her.
Because Lewis makes the point that because this sentence contains a metaphor,
fordi C.S. Lewis siger, at fordi en sætning indeholder en metafor,
that doesn't mean it's not real.
Så betyder det ikke, at den ikke er sand eller rigtig.
I am the door.
Jeg er døren.
It's not a literal door.
Ikke en sådan en dør.
But it's a real door.
Men det er en virkelig dør.
Jesus is the doorway into a real experience of God.
Jesus er døren, vejen ind til en sand.
Do you see that?
Oplevelse af Gud.
In other words, how do we react? The reformers used the word literally in a different way from we do today.
Dem der reformerede kirken i sin tid, de brugte ordet bogstaveligt på en anden måde.
And that's part of the confusion. Because one person says, I take the Bible literally. What they mean by that is buchstäblich, that they take it letter for letter. I am the door must mean a literal door.
Så når man, fordi dengang, når man sagde, at man tog Bibelen bogstaveligt, så mente man bogstaveligt, jeg er en dør.
But the reformers would have said, they take it literally, that is at face value. In other words, if you can't understand it literalistically, you move one level up.
Men de reformerede sagde, hvis man ikke kunne forstå det bogstaveligt, så måtte man gå et niveau op.
I remember sitting on a plane. I've sat on many planes, but I was sitting beside an Australian.
Jeg sad ved siden af en australier.
And he asked me what I was doing in Germany, and I said I was actually explaining the Book of Revelation.
Og han spurgte mig, hvad jeg lavede i Tyskland, og jeg sagde, at jeg underviste om Johannes' åbenbaring.
And he said, do you take it literally?
Så sagde han, tager du den bogstaveligt?
And I said, when people like you say things like that to me, I say to them.
Og så sagde jeg til ham, at når folk som dig siger sådan til mig, så siger jeg til dem.
Israel was a land flowing with milk and honey.
Israel var et land, der flød med mælk og honning.
Well, he thought I was crazy, of course.
Men selvfølgelig, jeg var tosset.
But I pursued it.
Men jeg gik videre med det.
Israel was a land flowing with milk and honey.
Flød af mælk og honning.
So when the Israelites came into the land,
så da israeliterne kom ind
they
i landet,
met a great sticky mass of milk and honey coming rolling down the main street.
Så kom der en stor klæbrig masse af mælk og honning rullende ned mod dem.
No, I said you wouldn't take it literally, would you?
Det tager man jo ikke bogstaveligt. You'd
take it spiritually, wouldn't you?
Man opfatter det åndeligt.
Israel was a land full of the milk of the word of God and the honey of the Holy Spirit.
Det var Guds ords mælk og åndens honning.
Now he was completely convinced I was crazy.
Nu var han selvfølgelig helt sikker på, at jeg var tosset.
I said, let's look at the sentence.
Jeg sagde, lad os kigge på den her sætning.
Israel was a land.
Israel var et land.
That's literal, base level.
Det er bogstaveligt, det kan man opfatte.
The milk and honey were real, literal, base level.
Og mælk og honning var også bogstaveligt rigtige, ægte.
The word flowing is a metaphor.
Men flyder med er metaforen.
But it stands for something real.
Men det står for noget, der er rigtigt.
The fact that this was a rich land producing good grass, good cows, good milk and bees and honey with the flowers.
Det var et godt land med gode køer og mælk og honning og bier og alt det her.
So we need to be careful with the word literal, otherwise we can confuse ourselves and many other people.
Så vi skal være forsigtige med ordet bogstaveligt, for ellers kan man blive forvirret.
Taking scripture seriously at face value is another matter altogether.
Det er vigtigt at tage skriftens ord alvorligt og møde.
Take even simple words. Most frequent in Genesis 1 is the statement, and God said.
For eksempel er et meget almindeligt ord i 1. Mosebog, og Gud sagde.
And I remember an astrophysicist who said to me, there you are, he said, you are crazy.
Jeg kan huske en astrofysiker, der sagde, det er jo helt galt det her.
God said?
Gud sagde.
Does he have a voice box and lungs like we've got?
Har han lunger, har han stemme?
Of course not.
Nej.
But what does God said mean?
Hvad betyder det, at Gud siger?
Well, we don't actually know.
Det ved vi ikke rigtigt.
But we know enough about human speech to understand what is meant, that God somehow spoke and imparted information that built the system up.
Men vi ved nok om menneskelig tale til at vide, at når Gud taler, så videregiver han informationer, som opbygger noget.
We don't take that word literalistically.
Vi tager det ikke sådan.
We take it seriously.
Vi tager det ikke bogstaveligt, men vi tager
that
det alvorligt.
That it's saying something utterly real that none of us understands.
Når det siger noget, der er fuldstændig virkeligt, men som ingen af os rigtig forstår.
Because God is spirit.
For Gud er ånd.
You see. So, that is my initial answer to that question.
Så det var noget af mit første del af mit svar til det
But
spørgsmål.
Of course, the reference is to Genesis.
Men referencen her er jo til første Mosebog.
In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. You take that at face value. It's talking about the heavens and the earth.
I begyndelsen skabte Gud himlen og jorden. Ja, det handler om himlen og
It's
jorden.
It's not a metaphor for something else.
Det er ikke en metafor for noget andet.
And we do this with every bit of language we read. What I plead for with people is, please don't treat the Bible as less than a book.
Det jeg siger til folk er, at de skal ikke behandle Bibelen som mindre end en bog.
It is much more than a book.
Den er meget mere end en bog.
But let's not treat it as less than a book.
Men lad os ikke behandle den som mindre.
So that's the little beginning.
Så det var en indledning.
Now, I've been asked about the age of the earth. I've been asked about theistic evolution. Theistic evolution is that evolution of some sort is the way in which God has constructed life.
Theistisk evolution går ud på, at evolutionen og udviklingen er den måde, som Gud har brugt til at danne livet.
And there are many Christians who believe that.
Det er der mange kristne, som tror.
Probably the majority in my country.
Sikkert de fleste, faktisk.
I don't happen to.
Men det gør jeg faktisk ikke.
It's not that my theism, my belief in God, is affected by this.
Det er ikke fordi min tro på Gud som sådan er påvirket af dette.
But ladies and gentlemen, I have difficulties with the what is commonly understood as evolution in two directions.
Men jeg har faktisk problemer med det, som bliver omtalt som evolution på to retninger.
I have difficulties from the biblical perspective.
Jeg har vanskeligheder både ud fra et bibelsk synspunkt.
And I have massive difficulties from the scientific perspective.
Og jeg har massive problemer med at forstå det ud fra et videnskabeligt synspunkt.
The scientific difficulties you'll discover in my book.
Og de videnskabelige synspunkter er beskrevet i min bog.
And since I want to encourage you to get that book, I'll deal with the other kind of difficulties now.
Fordi jeg gerne vil have, at I køber bogen, så vil jeg kun snakke om den anden del.
It is a very important question.
Det er et meget vigtigt spørgsmål.
I have a problem in understanding exactly what theistic evolution means.
Jeg har egentlig svært ved at forstå præcis, hvad teistisk evolution betyder.
Because my atheistic colleagues dismiss it instantly.
Fordi mine ateistiske kolleger, de afviser det med det samme.
If you say that God influenced this process.
Hvis du siger, at Gud, han påvirker den her evolutionsproces.
Then it is a guided process.
Så er det en styret proces.
And we do not believe that evolution is a guided process.
Og vi tror ikke, at evolutionen er en styret
so
proces.
So it contradicts our own conception of what evolution is.
Så den er i modstrid til vores egen begreber om, hvad evolution er.
But now very briefly, from a biblical point of view.
Men fra et biblisk synspunkt.
Take those 6 days of creation.
Hvis vi tager skabelsens 6 dage.
And God said, let there be.
Og Gud sagde, lad der blive.
And God said, let there be.
Og Gud
and
sagde,
so on. That's the exact opposite of a mindless, unguided process.
Det er præcis det modsatte af en bevidstløs, uledet proces, ustyret proces.
It really is an unpacking of John chapter 1, verse 1.
Det er faktisk en udpakning af Johannes evangeliet kapitel 1.
In the beginning was the word.
I begyndelsen var ordet.
All things came to be through him.
Og i gennem ham blev alting skabt.
Now let me get to the heart of the conflict.
Lad mig komme helt ind til roden af dette.
Naturalism starts with, in the beginning, were the particles or mass energy.
Det naturalistiske synspunkt starter med, i begyndelsen var masse og energi.
And mind is derivative.
Og vores sind og bevidsthed er afledt.
The biblical worldview is the exact opposite of that.
Og det bibelske verdensbillede er dets modsætning.
In the beginning was the Word.
Begyndelsen var ordet.
All things came to be through him. That is mass energy as derivative, not mind.
Og alt blev skabt ved ham, det vil sige at masser af energi er afledt af ordet, og ikke omvendt.
I ask myself, is there any scientific evidence of that?
Er der så noget videnskabeligt belæg for det?
And the irony is, one of the biggest comes from biology.
Og det sjove er, at et af de største belæg kommer rent faktisk fra biologien.
The longest word that human beings have ever discovered.
Det længste ord, som mennesket nogensinde har opfundet eller fundet.
A copy of it is in each one of the 10 trillion cells in your body.
Der er en kopi af det ord i hver eneste af de 10 milliarder eller trilliarder celler, som er i din krop.
The DNA of the human genome.
Nemlig vores menneskelige genoms DNA.
3.5 billion letters long.
3.5 milliarder bogstaver.
Now, as you know, I belong to an Oxford college.
Jeg er jo fra Oxford.
And when the conversation gets boring, sometimes I drop a little idea in just to see what happens.
Og nogle gange, når det bliver lidt kedeligt, så dropper jeg en lille bombe.
And I say to my colleagues, you know, I'm not a biologist, but I find this very interesting.
Og jeg siger for eksempel, ja, nu er jeg ikke biolog, men jeg synes det her er meget interessant.
You go to the seaside.
Så ned til stranden.
And how many letters has your name? 10.
Mange bogstaver er der i dit navn? 10.
You see the 10 letters of your name written in the sand.
Her står dine 10 bogstaverne på dit navn i
What stranden. Do you deduce?
Hvad udleder du?
Immediately intelligent input.
Momentant eller intelligent input er nogen der har skrevet det på stranden.
That's right. That's right. Ja, of course we do. Now I say you can now go into the laboratory.
Og så tager man ind i laboratoriet.
And you look at a bit of DNA.
Og man kigger på en streng af DNA.
3.5 billion letters long.
3.5 milliarder bogstaver.
Everyone in the right place.
Alle sammen på det rigtige sted.
And you look at it and you say.
Og du ser på det og så siger du.
Chance necessity.
Det er opstået tilfældigt.
What?
Hvad?
Chance in the laws of nature.
Tilfældighedens princip i naturlovene.
Why didn't you say that about the letters in the sand?
Hvorfor sagde du så ikke det om bogstaverne?
Then I sit back and listen.
Og så sætter jeg mig tilbage og lader diskussionen køre. Det bliver meget interessant.
It is extremely interesting because, ladies and gentlemen, there's an issue here.
Fordi der er nemlig noget her.
And it's what we call perception.
Det er det vi kalder opfattelse.
And at the level of perception, it seems to me that God has left that evidence in every one of us.
Og det siger, at på det niveau, hvor vi opfatter tingene, der har Gud efterladt os, givet os noget.
In the beginning was the Word.
Nemlig, at i begyndelsen var ordet.
Now, how old is the earth, you ask me?
Hvor gammel er jorden så?
Well, I don't know really.
Jeg ved det egentlig ikke.
But I can give you one little comment.
Men jeg kan sige noget om det.
That may make some of you want to shoot me, but that's all right.
Være,
I'm used to people wanting to execute me, actually.
Men det er jeg blevet vant til.
That's why I wrote this book, God's Undertaker.
Skrevet bogen Guds bøddel.
We've got to distinguish a lot of things that are different, ladies and gentlemen.
Vi må skelne mellem de ting, der er forskellige.
How does the Bible start?
Hvordan begynder Bibelen?
In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth.
I begyndelsen skabte Gud himlen og jorden.
When was that?
Hvornår var det?
I think of those days.
Tænk tilbage dengang.
Where do they start?
Hvor starter det hele?
Oh, you say Genesis 1:1, do they?
Starter det hele i 1. Mosebog 1:1?
Because there's a rhythm to them, isn't there?
Der er jo en rytme her.
And God said.
Og Gud sagde.
And God said.
Gud sagde.
That starts every one of the days from 2 to 6, doesn't it?
Det indleder alle dagene fra 2 til 6.
So my presumption would be that's what starts day 1.
Så jeg vil antage, at det var det, der begyndte dag 1.
So in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth is not day 1.
Så dag i begyndelsen, hvor himlen og jorden blev skabt af Gud, er ikke dag 1.
And as I understand from my friends who are expert in the Hebrew language, the text indicates that very clearly by changing the tense.
Og det står der også ret tydeligt, hvis man kan hebraisk, ved at tiden skifter i verbet.
So how old is the earth?
Så hvor gammel er
well,
jorden?
Well, it seems to me the Bible doesn't state it.
Det, Bibelen fortæller
so
os det ikke.
I would have no difficulty with the age that's given by CERN. It'll change, of course, science changes.
Så jeg har ingen problemer med de tal, der bliver opgivet ned fra CERN, som i øvrigt skifter engang.
But now there are three different ages we need to distinguish, don't we?
Der er tre forskellige aldre.
The age of the universe.
Der er universets alder.
The age of the earth.
Jordens alder.
And the age of humanity.
Menneskehedens alder.
They're not all the same, are they? No matter what you believe about the days of Genesis.
Uanset hvad man tror, så er det ikke den samme alder.
And as far as humans are concerned, ladies and gentlemen.
Og hvad mennesket angår.
And this is enormously important to me.
Og det er meget vigtigt for mig.
It seems to me that Genesis is very careful to say that humans are not the product of pre-existing animals.
Der ser det ud, som om Bibelen siger meget tydeligt, at mennesket ikke er et produkt af dyr, som levede førhen.
Genesis could have said it very easily.
Det kunne have stået meget tydeligt i første Mosebog.
But what it does say is God made human beings of the dust of the ground.
Men der står, at Gud skabte mennesket af støv.
Now if you were trying to write a book that explained that human beings were made from pre-existing hominids, that's a very silly way of doing it.
Så hvis man prøver at beskrive, at mennesket stammer fra en tidligere afart af mennesker, så er det en meget mærkelig måde at gøre det på.
Human beings, it seems to me, are a special creation of God.
Det forekommer mig, at mennesket er en særlig skabning, som Gud har skabt.
And let me remind you how special they are.
Og lad mig minde jer om, hvor særlige vi er.
God became one.
Gud blev til en. Et.
That is often left completely out of the discussion.
Og det er tit noget, man glemmer i diskussionen.
The universe is made to show God's glory.
Universet er skabt for at bevise Guds ære, herlighed.
It was not made in God's image. You were.
Men det blev ikke skabt i Guds billede, men du blev.
Now this is a big topic, ladies and gentlemen.
Og det er et stort emne.
So what do I think about the days?
Hvad tænker jeg om de her dage, der
well, what I think is not very important, really.
Det er ikke vigtigt, hvad jeg tror.
But if you want to know what I think,
men hvis I gerne vil vide det,
I've written another book about it.
Så har jeg skrevet en anden bog om det.
And it's called Seven Days That Divide the World.
Den hedder Syv Dage, som delte verden.
And it's written for my American friends, so it's a curious book. It's got a whole lot of appendices at the end.
Han skrev til mine amerikanske venner, så det er en sjov bog med en masse appendix.
With a major appendix on theistic evolution.
Med et stort appendix om teistisk evolution.
The appendices are actually more important than the main body of the book, but that's just the way it is.
Appendixerne er faktisk mere vigtige end selve bogen, men sådan er det.
So since I've done that, I'm not going to say any more on that topic. I'm going to finish with the biggest topic of all.
Så jeg vil slutte af med det største af emnerne.
Well, they're all related. One of them is, how do I personally deal with doubt? Well,
den tager jeg mig af tvivl.
Doubt has very distinct meanings. And the difficulty is, when the word doubt is used, people often think of that sickening feeling when the whole universe seems to collapse and we've no meaning at all. That's a very extreme kind of existential doubt.
Når vi taler om tvivl, så tænker vi tit på den form for tvivl, hvor hele falder fra hinanden, og vi ikke kan tro på noget som helst, en eksistentiel tvivl.
But doubt is the flip side of faith.
Men tvivl er faktisk bagsiden af tro.
And what I found in life is my faith in God develops.
Men efterhånden som min tro på Gud udvikler sig.
In proportion to my willingness to expose my faith to its opposite.
Og den udvikler sig i takt med, at jeg tør udfordre den med det modsatte af troen.
I have questions.
Jeg har spørgsmål.
I'll go to heaven with many of them unanswered, I suspect.
Når jeg kommer i himlen, så er mange af mine spørgsmål ubesvaret.
But I found that by exposing questions to their opposite and to people who do not agree with me.
Og ja, men jeg finder, når jeg stiller spørgsmål,
my questions, facing my questions has led to a lot of spiritual growth.
Når jeg virkelig udfordrer mine spørgsmål, så giver det mig vækst i min tro.
And if this question comes from someone who's asking big questions.
Og hvis det her spørgsmål kommer fra nogen, som virkelig stiller store spørgsmål.
Don't suppress them.
Så lad være at holde dig tilbage.
Go and talk to somebody about them.
Lad være at undertrykke det. Tal med nogen om det.
The Lord was very gentle with his disciples who had some of the deepest questions imaginable.
Herren var meget blid mild over for de disciple, som havde meget dybe spørgsmål.
And try and get some answers, because those answers, when you get them, will be real to you.
Og prøv at finde de svar, fordi de svar, når du får dem, så vil de være sande for jer.
And in time, they will enable you to help others with similar questions.
Og det vil sætte dig i stand til at hjælpe andre med lignende spørgsmål.
But one of the greatest reasons for doubting or not believing.
Men en af de største grunde til ikke at tro eller at tvivle.
Is the problem of suffering.
Er lidelsens problem.
And evil.
Og det onde.
Now again, I'm only going to mention a couple of things, and then I'm going to stop, and that's going to be it because it's already nearly 9:30.
Og jeg vil bare sige nogle enkelte ting, så stopper vi.
This is the hardest question I face.
Det er faktisk det
by far.
Langt det sværeste spørgsmål jeg får.
And we can argue about it philosophically.
Vi kan tale om det ud fra noget filosofi.
From now till midnight and day after day after day.
Davies.
And we won't find the argument satisfying.
Men vi vil ikke finde den diskussion frugtbar.
Why is that?
Og hvorfor er det?
I'll tell you why.
Det vil jeg sige.
Because the fact is that there's real suffering in this world.
Fordi det er en kendsgerning, at der findes ægte lidelse her i verden.
And there's pain.
Der er smerte.
And it's very complex.
Det er et meget komplekst spørgsmål.
Some of the evil is caused by human beings on other human beings.
Noget af det onde opstår, fordi nogle mennesker er onde over for andre mennesker.
But cancer is not caused that way.
Men det er ikke sådan cancer.
Neither are earthquakes or tsunamis.
Tsunamier.
And I shall never forget arriving in New Zealand 2 days after the earthquake at Christchurch.
Jeg vil ikke glemme, da jeg kom til New Zealand 2 dage efter jordskælvet i Christchurch.
And on the first Sunday, having to speak to people that had lost their husbands or their wives.
Og tale om søndagen til mennesker, som havde mistet deres mand eller kone eller.
So what do we say?
Så hvad siger man til dem?
My colleague said, "There it is. There's no God."
Der siger min kollega, sådan er det. Der er ingen Gud. Der
well,
kan du se.
Well, I can understand them.
Og det kan jeg godt forstå, at de siger.
But I notice that although they think they've solved the problem, there's one thing they haven't done.
Men jeg lægger også mærke til, at selvom de tror, de har løst det her problem, så er der en ting, de ikke har gjort.
They haven't got rid of the suffering.
De har ikke fjernet lidelsen.
They have got rid of all hope.
Men de har fjernet alt håb.
Now this is a very important thing.
Det er en meget vigtig.
And we can go one or two ways on it.
Og det kan man tage 2 veje.
Because you see, suffering is different in the eyes of the oncologist, the cancer specialist.
Fordi lidelse er noget forskelligt i øjnene på onkologer, altså cancerspecialisterne.
And in the eyes of the young mother of 30 who's just been told she's 4 months to live.
Og den unge mor på 30 som har fået at vide hun har 4 måneder tilbage at leve i.
There's a theoretical side, there's a philosophical side, but there's a very practical side.
Så der er en teoretisk og filosofisk side, men der er også en meget praktisk side.
The new atheists blame God for suffering.
De nye ateister skyder skylden på Gud for lidelse.
Look at all this evil, they say.
Se på alt det onde.
Therefore there is no God.
Derfor er der ingen Gud.
Now wearing my philosophy hat, I want to say to them.
Og som filosof vil jeg sige til dem.
If there is no God.
Hvis der ikke er nogen Gud.
Where do you get your concept of evil from?
Hvorfra får du så dit begrebsforståelse af det onde?
Well, that won't satisfy most people.
Det er ikke noget, som stiller folk tilfreds.
Because every man and woman, whether they are an atheist or not, is a human being, a moral being, made in the image of God, whether they believe it or not.
For alle kristne ateister, alle er mennesker, moralske væsener, der er skabt i Guds billede, om de ved det eller ej.
And one of the final questions was, what about the other religions?
Og hvad med de andre religioner er der også spørgsmål?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, other religions must speak for themselves.
Men jeg mener, at andre religioner må tale for sig selv.
But I want to tell you on this particular why I am a Christian.
Men jeg vil gerne fortælle jer lige med hensyn til det her, hvorfor jeg er kristen.
Because at this point, Christianity does not compete with any other religion I've ever heard of.
For der er ingen konkurrence mellem kristendom og nogen anden religion, som jeg kender til inden for det her.
Because none of the others offers me an answer like this.
Fordi der er ingen af de andre, som giver mig et svar som kristendom.
What is the answer?
Og hvad er svaret?
The answer is that at the heart of Christianity there is a cross.
Svaret er, at der i hjertet af kristendommen står et kors.
What does that mean?
Hvad betyder det?
If that is God.
Hvis det er Gud.
I mean, let's walk along that path just for a moment or two as we finish. If that is God, what is he doing on a cross?
Hvis det virkelig er Gud, hvad laver han så på et kors?
Well, it tells me something, doesn't it?
Det siger mig noget om ham.
I hope it tells you the same thing.
Jeg håber, det også siger dig noget om ham.
That God has not remained distant from our human suffering.
At Gud ikke er fjernt og langt væk fra vores menneskelige lidelse.
But has become part of it.
Men er blevet en del af den. Gået ind i den.
And for him the cross was not the end.
For ham var korset ikke afslutningen.
He rose from the dead.
Han stod op for de døde.
The atheists blame God and they say religion is evil.
Ateisten bebrejder Gud og siger at religion er ond.
And it may sound cruel, but I say to them, but you don't really believe in justice, do you?
Og det lyder måske grusomt, men jeg kan sige til dem, I tror jo ikke på retfærdighed.
By definition you don't.
Per definition tror jeg ikke på retfærdighed.
The vast majority of people who have ever lived will never see justice on this earth.
Langt de fleste af dem, som nogensinde har levet, vil aldrig se og møde retfærdighed på jord.
You can see that's obvious on your television screen.
Man kan bare åbne fjernsynet og se,
how
hvordan det gælder.
Blessed we are to live where we live.
Vi er velsignet i at vi bor hvor vi bor.
Now if atheism is true and death is the end, there is no afterlife. There is no ultimate justice.
Hvis ateismen er sand og livet når vi dør er der ikke mere, så er der ingen retfærdighed.
So the cry of the human heart for justice is a delusion.
Så råbet i menneskets hjerte efter retfærdighed er en usandhed.
No, it isn't.
Nej, det er det ikke.
Christ rose from the dead.
For Kristus opstod for de døde.
And God has demonstrated by that that he has been appointed the judge.
Og Gud viste at han er blevet til dommer.
And perfect justice will be done.
Og han vil yde perfekt, fuldkommen retfærdighed.
Atheism has no such hope, ladies and gentlemen.
Der er ikke et sådan håb i ateismen.
Because atheism has a problem with facing any judgment.
For ateisten har problemer med at stå over for retfærdighed og dom.
Stephen Hawking once says, Christianity is for people who are frightened of the dark.
Stephen Hawking sagde engang, at kristendommen er for folk, som er bange for mørket.
And I was asked to comment on it.
At jeg blev bedt om at kommentere.
And I said, if you want an answer like that, I'll give it to you.
Og jeg sagde, hvis du har den form for svar, så skal jeg nok give det.
Atheism is for people afraid of the light.
Ateismen er for folk, der er bange for lyset.
And that's true, ladies and gentlemen.
Og det er sandt.
I have had many an atheist say to me, I don't want there to be a God, because I do not want to have to face him.
Og der er mange ateismer, der har sagt til mig, jeg ønsker ikke, at der er en Gud, fordi jeg ønsker ikke at stå over for ham.
And this is where Christianity is unique, of course.
Og det her, kristendommen er enestående.
Because it offers us a salvation through faith in Jesus Christ, the Savior and Lord.
Fordi den tilbyder en frelse igennem Jesus Kristus, vores frelser og Herre.
And tells us that he took the penalty that I deserved.
Og den siger, at han tog straffen, som jeg havde fortjent.
So that I can know in this life that I'm free.
Så jeg i dette liv ved, at jeg er fri.
That doesn't compete with any other philosophy or religion. You find it nowhere else.
Det er der ingen anden filosofi eller religion, der kan give dig.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
Godnat, mine damer og herrer.